One year after the death of her infant daughter, Christina Voltaire vanishes into thin air. Did Christina's grief have a role in her disappearance, or did something far more sinister happen to her? And later, we dive into our first unidentified person's case. A little girl who was profoundly abused is found dead. No one has ever come forward to identify her, despite the numerous pictures available. Good evening. Welcome to the third episode of the Missing Minority Project. As a reminder, we're accepting case suggestions at our Facebook page at missingminorityproject@gmail.com and on Twitter at MMP_podcast. Thanks for the ratings and reviews on iTunes. They're important, so keep them up, please. As a warning, our episodes contain adult content and listener discretion is advised. This particular episode comes with additional warnings that there is brief reference to an infant's death and the second case contains graphic details about child abuse. This case goes in a lot of different directions, so we're going to hold our discussion until the end. What if your loved one went missing? What if years and years went by and you couldn't find them?
A somber anniversary in Milwaukee this weekend marked 13 years since Alexis Patterson was first reported missing.
What would you do? How much would you give to get them back?
Today we announced from the Family and Leaders Network that award is up to $10,000 for any information that can help lead to the discovery of Yasmin.
What if no one cared?
We should cover the country we have and not the country that we apparently imagine.
This is Lee.
And this is Travis.
Christina Voltaire went missing from her apartment on Avenue K Southwest in Winter Haven, Florida, on January 8, 2011. Christina was 22 years old at the time of her disappearance. She's African American, 5'2" and weighed about 120 pounds. She has black hair, brown eyes, and a cesarean section scar on her abdomen. She was last seen wearing a black nightgown. Christina was born in Haiti on August 1, 1988. Her father moved from Haiti to the United States in 1999, and Christina followed as a teenager. Her mother and siblings were still in Haiti at the time of her disappearance, and Christina was on a mission to make a good living so she could bring them to the United States. To achieve that goal, she was enrolled as a nuclear medicine student at Kaiser University in Lakeland, and by all accounts, she took her schooling very seriously. Her father reported that she was very close to completing her academic studies at the time of her disappearance. In 2007, Christina met Ducel Pierre Giles at a party. Ducel was born in Haiti and immigrated to the United States in 2000 and also lived in Winter Haven. Christina and Ducel soon developed a romance and lived together briefly in 2007 and 2008. Although Ducel moved out, they remained a couple. Christina fell pregnant during the relationship and had a daughter named Audrey, who died when she was around a year old on January 26, 2010. The medical examiner could not determine the cause of Audrey's death, although it is sometimes reported as a death by natural causes or from lung or breathing issues. Ducel always assumed he was Audrey's father until he went to file a life insurance claim and learned that Christina had put another man on Audrey's birth certificate. Ducel said he wasn't angry with Christina, but that he was very disappointed. He said he never pressed the subject with Christina because she was extremely distraught over the loss of Audrey. The revelation on the birth certificate led Ducel to cut off the romance about 8 to 10 months before her disappearance. But Ducel said that he and Christina remained friends. However, Christina's father, Jean Ives Voltaire, disputes Ducel's characterization of their relationship. Jean reported that he received a phone call from Christina at 1 a.m. a few months before she disappeared. Christina allegedly told her father that Ducel was physically aggressive with her. Christina told her father that the reason for Ducel's aggression was because she had taken up with Ducel's brother, Charles. Christina told her father that she wanted him to know what was going on in case anything ever happened to her. For his part, Charles denied ever having a relationship with Christina. He said that they had been friends since high school, but were never romantically involved. Dussel denied that he ever abused Christina and claimed rather that it was Christina and her father who had an uneasy relationship. But according to Jean, Christina was finally moving back to Palm Bay to be near him and to attend the Kaiser campus of her school. Jean had been trying to get Christina to move to Palm Bay since 2007 to get her away from a group of friends he didn't approve of.
It's worth noting that Dussel isn't a stranger to allegations of violence. In March 2008, around the time Christina and Dussel started dating, Dussel was charged with aggravated assault with the firearm after allegedly shooting a man who was leaving his Lakeland home. However, Dussel was acquitted of the charges in April 2010, and his lawyer told the media he was acquitted because he had an airtight alibi.
Around January 7th, 2011, Jean reported that Christina was in the midst of making a big decision, whether she wanted to be with Dussel or with Charles. So on January 8th, 2011, the day of her disappearance, Christina went to the manager at her apartment complex around 10 a.m. and asked that the locks to her door be changed. It's worth noting that both Dussel and Charles denied having keys to Christina's apartment. The locks weren't changed that morning, but a work order was entered. There's no information about why Christina wanted the locks changed. After she made that request, she headed to IHOP on Cypress Gardens Boulevard in Winter Haven. She chatted with a former coworker around 10:30 a.m., and then she postponed a hair appointment. By 11:30, Christina had finished her meal and decided to go home, telling witnesses that she felt under the weather. Her IHOP appearance would be the last time she was seen in public. Around 7:20 p.m., Charles was on his way home from work at a timeshare resort when the engine blew in his car. He walked to Christina's apartment in the Berkshires of Winter Haven. Christina lived there alone, right inside of the apartment complex's unlocked entrance. Charles called his mechanic from Christina's apartment and asked the mechanic to meet him back at his car. Christina still wasn't feeling well and was drinking tea. She'd already donned her black robe, so Charles assumed that she was in for the night. Charles locked the door to Christina's apartment, borrowed her 2001 tan Hyundai Elantra, and returned to his disabled car. Around 8 p.m., the mechanic gave Charles bad news. His engine had a sizable hole in it. Charles drove over to his mother's house and grabbed two plates of food, and then made his way back to Christina's house. At 8:30 p.m., Charles returned to Christina's apartment and let himself in. He couldn't recall if the door was locked or not, but he did recall using a key to get into her apartment. Upon entry, Charles found that Christina was missing. Her robe was on the corner of her bed, and her books, purse, and laptop were nearby. As the hours passed without Christina returning, Charles got concerned. He checked the windows and entry points, but found no signs of forced entry. Charles reported Christina missing after there was no sign that she was going to return. Reports say that he called on January 9th, so we're assuming that he called just a little past midnight.
Police wasted no time in looking at Charles. They seized Christina's car, but found no evidence of foul play, and the car was returned to Christina's family. Police confirmed that Charles's alibi checked out, and he cooperated fully with the investigation. Christina did not own a cell phone or credit cards, so there was little electronic information to assist them in their search. The police set their sights on Dussel within 4 days of her disappearance. Early in the investigation, the police suspect that Christina was traveling with Dussel, and that she was probably in danger. Police backed off that theory, and we're not sure why, but they still remain intensely interested in Dussel. However, the damage was done to Dussel. Once the news of Christina's disappearance broke, he was booted from his X-ray technology program.
Dussel retained an attorney. He denied involvement in Christina's disappearance, saying that he had no emotional attachment to her as they'd broken up 8 to 10 months earlier, and that he'd moved on with his life. He said that he'd left at noon on the day that Christina disappeared to visit a girlfriend in Fort Lauderdale who recently gave birth to their daughter. He also said that he went to visit a friend while he was there. Dussel said he arrived in Fort Lauderdale around 4 p.m. and that he both used his cell phone and made ATM withdrawals along the way. Winter Haven police obtained video footage from the Publix grocery store in Coconut Grove to corroborate his story, but said preliminary reviews were inconclusive due to the quality of the video. The footage was turned over to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement for enhanced review of the images, but we couldn't find any more information on what became of them. Doucelle told the press that he was happy to talk with the police, but that he would do so only in the presence of his attorney. Doucelle's attorney said that he'd accompanied Doucelle to all media and police interviews because of the language barrier. Doucelle understands English, but stumbles over his words. Doucelle said that he would offer that information to the police under the condition that he be in the company of his attorney. Subsequent news articles indicate that the meeting between Doucelle and the police was never arranged. According to Doucelle's attorney, this is because the police canceled one meeting and hadn't returned his last two phone calls to reschedule.
The dynamic between the brothers and the nature of each of their relationships with Christina is hard to determine. Doucelle confirmed in an interview with the media that he believed Christina and Charles were romantically involved. The police also believed Charles and Christina were romantically involved. However, Charles continued to deny the claims. Charles told the media that he believed Doucelle did not have any involvement in Christina's disappearance, but that he was not a detective. Charles said that he and Doucelle remained on good terms, but they did not hang out.
Police initially assigned one detective to work on Christina's case full-time, with four or five others assisting. Police determined that Christina's passport was out of date and concluded that it wasn't likely that she left the country. Police then concentrated their efforts on the Haitian community in hopes of getting more information, but there have been no leads. Police think it is unlikely that Christina is alive today, but have never named a person of interest or a suspect in the case.
There's a lot to parse out in this case. It's really hard to just wrap your head around. First, we should tell you that the coverage in Christina's case is severely lacking. What we presented to you is a parsing together of facts told over many months after her disappearance, and the Ledger was pretty much the only paper at the time that we could find that was reporting on her. So we put together the facts the best that we could. Her disappearance is really highly suspicious, and it's chilling. I mean, it really gives me the chills to think about what happened to her. And there was just no public attention or outcry. What do you think about that?
It's another case of minorities who just don't get the coverage. I'm not sure why, but I mean, this is very interesting. You would think somebody would want to cover it.
So let's get the elephant in the room out of the way. The birth certificate was a nuance in this case that could mean everything or could mean nothing. Who was Audrey's father? And is that a relevant factor in this case?
We're not shaming Christina for this, but we just want to make sure you guys have all the facts. Did this play into her disappearance? We don't know.
Then we have this whole weirdness surrounding the relationship between Christina and Charles. Everyone except for Charles says there's a relationship. Christina told her father there's a relationship, if you can believe the father. Doucelle told the media that he thinks there's a relationship. The police believe there's a romantic relationship between the two of them. Why is Charles denying this?
I think Charles is denying it because he knows it doesn't look good. I think he's been telling this lie so long, he'll never get off of it.
And maybe he's holding out plausible deniability to save face with his brother and maybe salvage the relationship, I suppose. I guess that could be another reason, but you're cooperating with police, allegedly, but this is the one point you're just not giving up. It's just a very odd part of the story for me.
I think we all know someone who's told a lie for so long, and they just won't come off and tell the truth. And maybe Charles had a girlfriend at the time, and he didn't want her to know the truth.
I also have questions about Christina's relationship with her father. My heart really goes out to him, and I will give a spoiler here and say I don't think he had a thing to do with this. But I wonder what the whole thing was about getting her to move back to Palm Bay and away from these friends in Winter Haven, which is where she disappeared from. At the time he was trying to get her to move back, she was 19. She was an adult.
Christina's father obviously knows her way better than all of us. And at 19, maybe he saw that she was more of a follower than a leader, And these group of friends that she was hanging out with just weren't good people. And he saw the writing on the wall that maybe she was making irresponsible decisions. She was just doing things outside of her normal behavior. So he tried to head it off before it became a bigger issue.
I wonder if the police spent any time looking at these friends. I mean, there was nothing for us to go off here. So we don't know, but that's something that stuck out to me. You know, are these people that the police should have gone back and looked at as potentially people that could have been involved in her disappearance?
I don't think Christina's father suspected the friends, or I believe he would have made a statement or something to show that he believed that that was the case.
I will agree with that. He's been Christina's most vocal supporter, and he's been pretty active in talking to the media to the extent that there's media coverage at all of this case. So I agree with that. I just hope that, you know, police do their due diligence and try to figure out who these friends were and give them a look. The absolutely most chilling fact of this case for me is that she asked to have her locks changed that morning. Now, disclosure here, this was not confirmed by the police, but rather reported in a news article by The Ledger. And The Ledger, again, is pretty much the only outlet that picked this story up. And they did say that it happened. So let's assume that it did. And I believe that it did. Why? Charles and Ducell have denied to the media that they had a key. I don't know. You can take that with a grain of salt. But if we assume that Charles and Ducell didn't have a key, who is she scared of?
Just because you weren't given permission to have a key doesn't mean that they didn't have a key. I think that if she had a stalker or someone she was afraid of, she would have told her father. And I think she asked for the locks to be changed because she might have simply been unsure if someone had a key, or she had the reason to believe that maybe someone stole her key and made a copy. We just don't know, but I think she would have told her father if it was a random person, like a stalker or someone that she was a little afraid of.
I think so too. Another weird thing about the night of her disappearance is that Charles said the last thing he saw her wearing was a black robe. And we know from Charles's account that when he came back, the robe was on the bed. So what was she wearing when she left? Was she in a nightshirt? What did she have on? Her purse is also there, so it doesn't seem like she intentionally got up and went somewhere. And I don't think we know if particular clothes were missing from her wardrobe because she lived alone. So I'm not sure we'd know if she changed from a nightshirt to something else, but the purse being there, her being in a robe, I feel like she might have just been taken in her nightshirt. What do you think?
But if she was just out in a nightshirt, I think people would have noticed that.
Maybe, but she was the first apartment inside the complex's door, which was unlocked. So maybe someone just came in. They knocked on the door. She's expecting Charles. They snatch her up, take her outside and put her in a car, maybe?
I would like to think she would have made some type of noise. And again, just grabbing her in her nightshirt alone, taking her out to the street, I think somebody would have noticed it.
Maybe. Do you think someone called her and she got dressed and was taken that way?
I mean, anything's possible. But personally, I think she was abducted very quickly because only an hour had passed since the last time Charles had seen her. I just don't know.
Let's talk about the timeline. So the last time she was seen in public is at 11:30 a.m. at IHOP. And then we have a gap from 11:30 to 7:20 when Charles says that he saw her. So that's a pretty big gap. But I feel like the police did verify that Charles was at work. So Charles does come home from work. Let's assume the police did verify that. And I feel like they at least did that. He's coming home from work. His car breaks down. The engine has a hole in it. It can't go anywhere. He has to meet a mechanic. He goes to his mom's house. So if you kind of assume that Charles is the one responsible for this, and I don't think that at all, you have to assume that all these people are complicit in his alibi, his work, the mechanic, his mom.
But then again, no one else saw Christina except for Charles.
Are we going to give Charles points for cooperating? Because the police did say, or the media did report, that he cooperated immediately and fully with the police.
Yeah, I give him points for that, but I'm not saying he did it. It doesn't fit right. Something just does not fit here.
I wonder if they ever processed his car. I know they processed Christina's car, but I didn't read anything about them processing his car, so I'd be interested to know that. I'm not sure what the police did in this case. It was very difficult to find any information, but I'd be interested to know those results. And then there's Ducell.
I definitely don't hold it against him that he lawyered up, and I feel like we always forget to say that. If the police come knocking at your door, get a lawyer. So we're not going to hold that against Dussel. And additionally, he's already been through the criminal justice system, so he was savvy enough to get representation right away. You're not going to go through the criminal justice system and then have the police come knocking at your door looking for a missing girl and fail to get a lawyer.
I don't blame him for getting an attorney. Actually, that was pretty smart. But I don't think the police have much in this case. And to be honest, I don't think they're trying to get much either.
I agree with that. I didn't find much evidence that they were doing anything but following Dussel around for the first at least week or so before it completely dropped off the radar. I do feel like Dussel was pretty forthcoming to the media, at least, about his potential alibi. He offered them what he said was electronic evidence of the ATM, of the cameras. He says that to the media. And then we kind of stop hearing about Dussel as a suspect. What do you make of that? He wasn't a suspect, but the police seemed to back off of him at that point. So do you feel like they may have validated that information?
To an extent, but I also feel like they didn't have much information. So even the people they suspect, it was all circumstantial. It was all kind of guesswork. So in regards to the brothers, I don't think the police have cleared them, but I just don't think the police have enough to follow them, to continue to interrogate them, because the police simply just don't have enough.
I think our listeners are going to say, oh, well, Dussel had a big motive because of the birth certificate thing. And, you know, he found out that Audrey wasn't his. My problem with that is this is 8 to 10 months after he found out the birth certificate. That's a long time to plot on someone's abduction and what looks like murder over that birth certificate. It was 8 to 10 months ago. You would assume he would have committed the crime way before.
Yeah, I think something like that would have been more impulsive. He would have done it much closer to the time that he found out. But then again, who knows? For me, this is a big mystery in general, just because there's no information and there wasn't a whole lot of coverage. So I think a lot of the leads that could have been explored have vanished with her.
I have the same thoughts when I think about Dussel's motive being that Christina was dating Charles. We suspect that he found out at least a month before her disappearance that that was going on. At least that's what her father indicated when he said that Christina called to say Dussel was abusing her a month before her disappearance. So would he then kidnap Christina a month later after that because he was angry about what he found out a month ago? That just seems to me to be such a crime of passion. I feel like it would happen immediately, not a month later. I guess the aggravating factor there could be that Christina was making a decision, allegedly, the night before between Dussel and the brother. So maybe that prompted Dussel's violence. But again, you know, if he, in fact, really was going to visit this other woman who he had a baby with, it seems like he'd likely moved on with his life. So I just don't know that I feel like that's the motive here. The scariest thing to me, I think, here is that if it wasn't Dussel and it wasn't Charles, I don't know who it is. And that just scares me. It scares me to think that someone could have walked into her apartment complex and taken her literally off the face of the earth. And when you read between the lines and the information we have, and of course the police probably have way more information than we do, I hope they do, it looks like that could have happened here. And it's just absolutely chilling. Some people have speculated that this was a suicide that resulted from Christina being bereft over the death of her daughter. It's a no-go for me. How about you?
I don't think she committed suicide. Had she done that, I think the body would have been discovered by now, or there had been more evidence to lead police to believe that that happened. So, no suicide for me.
Plus, if Charles had her car, she then had to leave by foot, commit suicide. And that's, you know, where did she go? How did she get there? Did she walk? If she didn't walk, was there someone that drove her to the place that she committed suicide? To me, it doesn't work as a theory here.
So what do you think about the runaway scenario?
Doesn't work for me. She didn't take her purse. She was last seen in a black robe. She didn't have a car. She was about to graduate. She was going to go see her mom in Haiti in April. Why? That just doesn't seem like a logical conclusion here. And she wanted to change the locks. The locks, for me, are the big thing here. If that is true and correct information, that tells me absolutely it was foul play, because it is too coincidental
that you ask for the locks to be changed and then you just disappear. You don't ask for the locks to be changed and then run away.
I don't think she ran away. I mean, there's no history of it. There's no mention of it from her father. So unless she had a history or something that her father has failed to mention, the runaway scenario doesn't work for me either.
To me, there's no question that she was abducted and she was met with foul play. Unfortunately, I don't know who it was. I don't know if it was a stranger, which just terrifies me in this case for some reason, or if it was someone known to her. I do know that there was a big push by the police to look into the Haitian community, and they concentrated a lot of their efforts there. So I don't know perhaps if they do have evidence that someone within that community committed the crime, but we don't have enough information to make a conclusion about that.
I agree. I think she's abducted. I think she's abducted by someone who's familiar with her and who she was familiar with. I don't think it was a stranger. I think this is a classic case of someone you're familiar with taking your life. And it's sad.
I agree. I think it was someone who had the key and they accessed her apartment. They took her while she was in her nightshirt, threw her in a car, and that was the end of it. Or perhaps they didn't have a key and they knocked at the door and she answered it because she was expecting Charles and that was the end of it. But I don't think that she's alive anymore. I agree with the police on that one. If you've seen Christina or had contact with her, you should contact the Winter Haven Police Department tip line at 861-291-5699. You can remain anonymous. This is such a disturbing disappearance on so many levels. And one of the most sad things for me is that I couldn't find many stories about her life to share with you, and that's something I want to do every week. So here's what I know about her. She was a mother. She was a daughter who was working to reunite her family in a better place. She was smart, a future nuclear medicine scientist. Christina was loved, and you can see the evidence of that threaded through her friends and her father's persistence in getting her case attention. We want to give a shout out to one of our favorite true crime podcasts. The Gone Cold podcast explores missing and murdered cases in Texas that have gone unsolved. We really enjoy it. So head on over to GoneColdPodcast.com and give a listen.
When we started this, we did not expect to cover Jane Doe cases. However, we got a suggestion from a listener, Heather, who suggested we look into the Opelika Jane Doe. We read about her and we knew we had to cover her. This case is 100% solvable.
On January 28, 2012, a young boy found a human skull in Lot 47 of the Brookhaven Trailer Park in Opelika, Alabama. When investigators arrived on the scene, they found a young girl's long-sleeved pink shirt about 50 feet away with hearts and buttons and a ruffled neckline. Investigators found the jawbone, hair, and other bones belonging to the owner in a heavily wooded area across the street from Lot 47. Forensic testing determined that the remains belonged to an African-American child with curly brown hair, and it was worn in spirals. Forensic analysts weren't able to determine much more about this little girl. Not her height, not her weight, not her eye color. But what they were able to determine is absolutely horrific. The little girl was extremely malnourished. She had extensive bone injuries inflicted on her throughout her short life. One injury to her eye was profound. She was between 4 and 7 years of age, so she would have been born from 2004 to 2008. However, her skull size was extremely small, and that indicated that she could have been a bit younger, or was small due to malnourishment, or had a disability. Malnutrition caused her teeth to look underdeveloped, and possibly small and out of place on her face. She may have had a sickly appearance and poor hygiene. It's estimated that she died anywhere from 8 months to 2 years before she was discovered. Residents recall smelling a strong decaying odor in the fall of 2011. The police have searched extensively to look for the identity of this little girl. No records of a girl matching her description were found within the Alabama school system, and the Department of Child Services also had no children matching that description.
In 2016, investigators got a huge tip, and they thought that tip was going to crack the case. A picture of a girl who fit the Jane Doe's description surfaced. The picture was taken at Greater Peace Church in the summer of 2011. The girl has a visible deformity in her left eye, just like Jane Doe would have had. Unbelievably, no records at the church turned up her identity, and no one has stepped forward to identify her. Police believe this little girl would have been quiet and unable to communicate with other children on their level. She was most likely never seen in public, except for maybe her church outing in the summer of 2011. Isotope testing revealed that the little girl was most likely native to the southeastern states, Alabama, or the surrounding states. We are going to post her pictures on our website and on social media. We ask that you share as much as you can. This girl is not Jessie Shockley. I confirmed that personally with the police department. So please remember, she is not Jessie Shockley. Police do presume she's a homicide victim.
If you have information about her case, call the Opelika Police Department at 334-705-5220. That's 334-705-5220. Or the Secret Witness Hotline at 334-745-8665. 334-745-8665.
So now you know why we think this case is solvable. We have a picture of who we think this child is in 2011 at a church. And it boggles my mind that no one has stepped forward to identify her. It seems to me maybe she was a foster child from outside of Alabama who may have come to visit a relative in the summer of 2011. If you go by what the residents say, there was a decaying odor in the trailer park in the fall of 2007. So perhaps she went to the church. That was one of the few times she was seen in public. The abuse escalated and she died in the fall. So that's my theory of the case as to what may have happened to her.
So again, we have a child that I believe was in the foster care system. And I just want to know, is there no database or no one responsible for checking on these children? Because I feel like we have a picture. We have a general area that she's from. I feel like there should be some type of database or something similar to that where people can put two and two together.
I mean, I think we have NAMIS, we have state foster care systems. This falls back on the caseworkers. If she was indeed a foster care system from a bordering state of Alabama, then again, it would be a caseworker that's dropped the ball and has lost his child out of the foster care system. I suppose another thing that could happen is this is a child that was born into profound abuse and was never registered into a school system and then never came on radar. And maybe she lived in or by that trailer park the entirety of her whole life. And for whatever reason, in August 2011 or the summer 2011, she was able to go to that church vacation school for whatever reason. And that was the only time she was seen in public. Do you think that there's a member of the church who knows who she is?
Maybe not the church, but I mean, where was she born? These are questions I have. You know, who are her relatives? Who were the people responsible for caring for her? At a bare minimum, if she was in a foster care system, she should at least have a folder on someone's desk. It just baffles me that in today's society, there's no answers in this.
But what if she wasn't in the foster care system? She was never registered for school ever in her life. Then who's responsible? Then who should know about her?
But she had to be born somewhere. Someone knew of somebody who had a baby, and all of a sudden the baby disappeared. And for our listeners who are in the Alabama area or anywhere, if you're aware of someone who had a child between 2004 and 2008 and that child is no longer around, I don't care the story they gave you. Just look at her picture on our Facebook page or our website. Try to jog your memory. And if you think it's the smallest minute detail, doesn't matter. Just call the police department and it might be the thing that helps bring resolution to this case.
Oh, baby, we'll be old and think of all the stories that we could have told.
I can't say anything about this little girl in life. I can't describe her laugh or her giggles, her hobbies or her quirks. Because someone robbed her of her life, and not just through murder. This little girl was abused, it seems, for the entirety of her life. Our music is the classical version of The Reckoning Song by Asaf Avidan.